because I know you're a little pressed for time, we're going to get to some reader questions.
Okay, awesome. Now, mind you, I Googled myself one time, and the Music Radar video that I did in, I think it was Cambridge or something like that, it's all over the place. It's like, thanks for getting that out there, and the exposure is pretty cool.
No, so, you're big with our readers, man.
Like, there was one guy who could comment and say, I sound like Kermit the Frog when I talk. I'm like, well, I'm just as God made me, you know?
Well, you do sound like you've had some cups of coffee.
Well, I'm a little bit, it's not coffee, it's Diet Coke.
Okay, whatever works for you.
Whatever gets you up.
A reader by the name of Eric the Weary asks, if you knew that someone like Jeff Beck or Eric Johnson was in the audience, how would that affect your playing?
I always tell my tech, I go, if there's a famous person in the audience, like Billy Gibbons showed up to one of our gigs in Chattanooga, I said, if there's a famous person in the audience, wait till the end of the show to tell me, because there's just no way I can play the same way with those kind of people in the audience. I don't want to know they're there. I'm honored that they're there, but I can't waltz on stage going, Eric Johnson's in the crowd, and then you feel like kind of weird because you're stealing his stuff.
A reader by the name of John Franco 888 wants to know what your definition of cool is.
I think the definition of cool would probably be like Clapton in his Armani suits playing the blues, going, don't have to apologize for being who you are and looking good if you want to play the blues. My definition of cool is probably in same things, Muddy Waters back in the day, you know, bottle of Johnny Walker Black and a tailored suit, you know, at the Newport Jazz Festival, about ready to walk on stage. You know, that to me is cool. The nonchalance of it all is the cool part of it.
A reader by the name of Gary 110 wants to know, what amp settings do you use for tracks like Dirt in My Pocket and Slow Gin?
I don't really remember. Basically, I will preface this conversation with this fact. Gary's probably obviously a guitar player, and I can hand Gary my guitar and my amp setup, and he'd probably manage a way with, you know, working with for 20 minutes to make it sound like Gary. And vice versa, if Gary handed me his guitar and his amp setup, I'd probably be able to, within 20 minutes, make it sound like me. So that's why the guitar is such a cool instrument, because it's so tactile, and it's so based on, you know, everybody's playing and their feeling and their hands and their just, you know, muscle structure and everything. But as far as, you know, amp settings go, I basically run 100 watt amps as loud as they can possibly go all the time, but without having them being collapsed and too gainy. So what you do is you get this massive amount of clean headroom that you achieve by that, and you just kind of vary the amount of gain by using your volume control.
A reader by the name of UBT Guitarist wants to know, what kind of things do you usually go over when you practice, and how much do you practice?
I practice when I'm at home in California, and I practice stuff that normally I don't play live. You know, like in my house, I'll set up like a rack of like acoustic guitars or a rack of dobros or, you know, even basses, you know, just to get me out of the normal headspace of Les Paul Marshall, you know, because I do that every day, you know. And so it's like, you know, maybe I use a 335 or in a little Fender Princeton and just, you know, try to work on my feel and my, you know, vibrato and pitch control and you know, just, you know, getting tones out of setups and amps and guitars that are not normally try to go for.
LS Go Card 7 wants to know, and this actually relates back to what you were saying, whenever I try to solo, I feel like I'm playing the same pentatonic licks, and it just sounds scalish. I was wondering if you had any advice on breaking out of this rut.
Stop playing for a week. I think that's the best way to break out of a rut. Just put it down, put it in the case, forget that you're a guitar player. Go rent a four-wheeler, go, you know, rent a bicycle or get on a bike and just ride and forget you're a guitar player. Come back to it a week later and again have a new headspace. But the worst thing you can do is sit there and beat your head against the wall and, you know, try to... And it may not be a week. It could be 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, or 2 days, you know. Oh, just go back to it when you're re-inspired.
A reader by the name of Tom Shambolix wants to know what you think the advantages are, tonally or comfort-wise, in the way you string your Les Pauls back over the tailpiece fashion.
First of all, I should have to give credit to Jimmy Page and Billy Gibbons for that, because that's the thing that I saw. You know, I saw that's the way they were stringing their guitars back in the 70s. For me, the tonal advantage is probably 4 or 5%. It's not a huge advantage. But you can you're able to screw the stud down to the top without sagging your bridge. That's a good advantage, you know. And it also decreases the angle in which the strings go over the bridge, thusly making the guitar feel slinkier, so when you use 11 to 52s, you don't feel like you're playing on telephone cables. And I think you do get an advantage with 11 to 52 string nickel wound, because I think you do get a thicker bottom and a rounder non-wound string. You know, so that actually is I think, a real advantage. The other thing that I do find with that setup is that you don't have that really weird feeling when you go to mute the strings down by the bridge, where you have this tremendous angle, and it just feels like your hand's falling off the back. You kind of have this nice rounded curve and more of a, you know, it's just more inviting feel to play.
A reader by the name of Keith M. wants to know, have you ever plugged straight into the amp and thought, this is the sound for me, with no pedals and no additional amplifiers?
No. I'm not a pedal guy, either. I don't use the overdrive pedals. There's not one amp that's made by anybody, and that's why I have a lot of friends in the boutique amp business, and generally when they approach me, this is the ultimate end-all be-all, I go, well, maybe for somebody else, but not for me, because you cannot make an amp that does both the high end, the bottom end, and the mids at the same time. It's not going to happen. There's not enough power in the world to make that happen. I think there are some great amplifiers, and there's some great amps that, you know, I could plug straight into and get a sound out of, but if the words end-all, be-all, or, you know, this is the sound for me, it's not going to happen. There has to be a mid-range amplifier. There has to be a top and bottom amplifier. There's just no way you can get that kind of thing with one amp.
And lastly, a reader by the name of Peter Jan wants to know if you can recommend a good budget amplifier for him.
Yeah, well, I was just talking about this online the other day. A cool amplifier that I found for $200 was a Marshall Classic Lead 30, which is a late 70s solid-state single 12 30-watt combo. But why would you want to buy that for $200? Well, if you really get down to it, the inputs on them are FET gain. Now, when you drive the clean channel on a FET gain amplifier, it sounds very Dumble-esque. It has that hyper-articulation, hyper kind of like compressy, yet it's saturated, yet there's a focus in the middle. And that amp was $200. Out of the box, I like AC30s, you know. I don't know if that's a budget amplifier. It's like $1,000. Out of the box, I like some of the little orange Tiny Terror for a little practice amp. That's a pretty good amp out of the box, and I think that's only $400. What else can I say as far as budget amps? I think anything that Silvertone made back in the 60s with 6V6s and has, you know, 20 watts or old Gibson amps, you can still pick up for $300-$400. Those are cool vintage budget amps, underpriced in the market. Old Supros and National amps with the three panels that are $400-$500, underpriced in the market. Yeah, you don't have to spend $1 million to get good stuff.
So lastly, I have a question of my own.
Sure.
I knew Danny Gatton back in the day when he used to come up and play in New York City. I used to go see him, and I was just completely bowled over. And you played with him when you were just a kid, which is astonishing. Right. What are your memories of Danny Gatton?
My memories of Danny were he was my best friend, my guitar buddy. We talk amps. We talk tellies and just everything in between. You know, he was a guy, he pulled me aside and said, Von Moss, you don't know anything about jazz. No, you don't know anything about country. You know, you don't know anything about real rock and roll. I'm not talking about, like, you know, Led Zeppelin. No, we're talking about, like, Chuck Berry and you know, Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps and Buddy Holly and, you know, all those greaser bands from the 50s, you know. You don't know anything about that. You don't know anything about rockabilly. You don't know anything about bluegrass or, you know, what's the difference between, you know, Wes Montgomery and Charlie Christian. I mean, I'm like, all of a sudden my world went from mono to stereo in a big hurry.
Right.
And here was a guy, we sat outside the Cat Club, not to use a New York City reference, but he'd play the Cat Club or the Bottom Line or Tramps or whatever he was playing. You know, we just sit out in his Winnebago, and he'd go, here, kid, try this. And, he'd play Scotty Moore's 295, and I'd play his telly. And he'd just show me a riff, and I'd go home for a couple weeks and then come back and see him. And then, you know, I'd show him that I learned it. He's like, well, what'd you learn? And, like, most importantly, like, you learned the riff, but you learned why the riff was played in the first place. And that was, like, the whole big thing. It's like kind of getting into guitar players' heads. And really kind of like making it, you know, like, you know, it's one thing to play a riff, but like, why'd you do it in the first place? You know, it's like if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? Kind of like theory, you know, in reality kind of thing. So, but that is, you know, one of the things for me that I learned from him, and just the fact that he was a nice guy, best guitar player in the world, a nice guy in the world. You know, I mean, that's the kind of person he was.
Joe, it's been great talking to you.
Thank you, sir. I've actually had a blast, and it's, you know, I'm really honored that there's, you know, people in music radar, you know, are digging what we're doing. We're just trying to just be honest with ourselves and make the best records and put on the great, you know, best shows we can, and that's it.
I should mention that you do have a new album out, which is called Live from Nowhere in Particular.
That is the title.
Where was it recorded? Because it doesn't say on the credits.
Well, that's what the whole ever-loving point of saying Live from Nowhere in Particular is.
I know. I'm looking through the credits. I'm like, okay, where was this track? Where was that track? And it doesn't say.
It was recorded basically three nights and various nights, but I can't say for reasons because I'm not going to pay $10,000 in origin fees to venues that don't deserve it. Like, that was the whole reason why it wasn't live from Chicago or live from the Delaware State Fair, because they all want like 10 grand to record a whole night's worth of music, whether you're going to use it or not. They just want it, you know, it's to me, it's just lunacy.
Okay.
So, and I don't want to have to charge $30 for the CD, you know what I'm saying? It's something that you pass the savings down to the fan, which is basically what I'm all about.
Exactly. Well, Joe, thank you for talking to me. This is Joe Basso from Music Radar, and I've been speaking to Joe Bonamassa.
You're very welcome, man. Thank you for doing this, and I'm still just very honored and tickled pink by all the good response you guys have had for the little demonstration I did, and I hope to do more for you at any time.
That'd be great, man. Take care.
Thank you, dude.
Have a good one.